Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 348. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have so much ground to cover on this week's episode. We're actually going to switch up the format a little bit. I know, I promised you last week that Carney Wilson of Wilson Phillips was going to be on this week's episode, and I wasn't trying to lie to you, it's just stuff went a little bit awry. So Carney Wilson not on this week's episode. She will not be on episode 348. She will be on episode 349, which will be next week. I promise it. Trust me, the recording's already done. She's on next week's episode. You are going to love it. Some other shout outs that I want to get out of the way before I tell you what we're going to do this week. We have two new affiliates that we are so excited about. You can now hear This Show Is So Gay from 11 a.m. to noon on 103.7 FM WPVM, the Voices of Asheville. The mission of WPVM is to raise awareness of social, cultural, and community issues and activities via radio airwaves. WPVM strives to be a beacon of Asheville's creative and cultural voice for the community and to broadcast to Asheville and to the world all that is unique about the artistic, social, and cultural heritage of Asheville and Western North Carolina. This Show Is So Gay, now on WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. Hi, everybody there in Asheville. And you can now hear This Show Is So Gay on Radio Free Radical. That's radiofreeradical.org. Radio Free Radical offers you the very best of alternative, independent, political, social justice championing, status quo challenging audio media in a truly innovative form. So there you go. We're right there on radiofreeradical.org. Always thrilled to have new partnerships. Such great folks out there doing incredible things to highlight all of the different voices out there. Well, on this week's episode, what we normally do for our new listeners, we usually start with an interview and then we do the news, but we're going to switch things up. I'm going to cover all the latest LGBTQ news that's out there right now, and then I'm going to bring to you one of my favorite interviews from the past couple years. It's with our great buddy, Dr. Frankie Bashan. She has appeared on the show probably more than any other guest in the history of the show, and she's going to be back to give us some relationship advice. It is always timely. So that's going to be coming to you after all the latest news. But first, let's get to the news. There is so much going on out there. Speaking of North Carolina, WPVM, you are finding yourself in a state that is really posing some problematic things for the LGBTQ community. North Carolina lawmakers voted overwhelmingly this week to strike down all existing LGBT-inclusive non-discrimination ordinances in the state during a special legislative session called in response to Charlotte, North Carolina, passing a trans-inclusive ordinance. The state's Republican-led House of Representatives passed House Bill 2 by a vote of 83-24 this week, according to the Anti-LGBT North Carolina Family Policy Council, which supports the legislation that it calls the Charlotte Bathroom Bill. Again, this is yet another example of an ordinance being boiled down to just one piece, and it's the piece that they use as scare tactics to get people to support it. This crazy idea that they're going to be transgender individuals in a bathroom terrorizing people, even though that has never, ever happened anywhere. Less than 10 hours after this bill was introduced in North Carolina, the bill unanimously passed the Republican-controlled Senate in a vote of 32-0 because every Democratic senator walked out of the chamber in protest. And Governor Pat McCrory, he has indeed signed this bill. This special session was called in response to Charlotte's public accommodations ordinance passed by the local city council in February, which added sexual orientation and gender identity to the city's anti-discrimination law. The ordinance does not affect employment, only public accommodations, and it does include guarantees that transgender people can use the facilities that correspond with their gender identity. The ordinance applies to shops, restaurants, taxi and limousine services, and other businesses that serve the general public. Businesses refusing to serve same-sex weddings or LGBT pride events, for example, would have been in violation of the ordinance. The ordinance was set to take effect April 1st, but lawmakers in North Carolina have the power to overrule municipal decisions, which was the goal of HB2. So yes, this has passed in North Carolina. It is so depressing. North Carolina's Democratic Attorney General Roy Cooper issued a terse video statement moments after the House vote saying North Carolina is better than this. He said this, quote, "Discrimination is wrong, period. That North Carolina is making discrimination part of the law is shameful. It will not only cause real harm to families, but to our economy as well. We have seen how this played out when Indiana tried it. Businesses left the state or thought twice about bringing in new jobs, and millions of dollars in revenue was lost." So that is what's going on in North Carolina. This just happened. This has just happened a few hours before we are recording this episode. So the responses are just starting to stroll in, but I suspect, yes, indeed, North Carolina Democratic Attorney General Roy Cooper, there will indeed be an economic impact. We are already starting to see companies step forward and say, well, then we're not going there. We will not be bringing our business to North Carolina. So that's going on in North Carolina. There are other states that are doing some really nutty things. In Georgia, with legislation sitting on Governor Nathan Deal's desk that would allow Georgia businesses to refuse service to LGBT people if it conflicts with their religious beliefs, film giant Disney has said that it will no longer do business in the southern state if the bill passes. A Disney spokesperson said this in a statement, quote, "Disney and Marvel are inclusive companies, and although we have had great experiences filming in Georgia, we will plan to take our business elsewhere should any legislation allowing discriminatory practices be signed into state law." Disney and Marvel proactively making a statement. Let's talk about that bill. The bill that has reached the Republican governor would allow businesses, nonprofits, and individuals to discriminate against LGBT people and others by citing religious beliefs. The Human Rights Campaign and many others are concerned that HB 757 would allow adoption and foster care agencies, homeless shelters, drug clinics, food pantries, and for-profit businesses to refuse service to LGBT people. HRC President Chad Griffin made a plea for Hollywood to stand up against the bill during a Los Angeles Gala fundraiser last weekend. He said this, quote, "You have the influence and the opportunity to not only defeat this bill, but to send a message that there are consequences to passing dangerous and hateful laws like this." So there you go. Disney threatening to pull out of Georgia if this is signed. If Disney does end up pulling out of Georgia, it would be a huge blow to the state, which has offered significant tax incentives to Hollywood studios. It's estimated Georgia saw $1.7 billion in film and TV-related spending last year. Marvel films like X-Men First Class and Captain America Civil War were partially made in Georgia. Also, the NFL has recently insinuated that it would not allow Atlanta to host future Super Bowls if HB 757 is passed. So, a lot of economic impact there. This is a little bit different than North Carolina. This is Georgia, who has not yet signed this bill into law, and so some businesses, some companies, some really high-profile people are stepping up and saying, look, if you sign this, there will be an economic impact. It will be a detriment to your state, as opposed to North Carolina, that now is just going to have to deal with the economic fallout of their really misguided and horrible and dangerous and discriminatory bill. But that's not all. That's not all. That's not the only bill. Now, this is the one that gets me more fired up than any other story out there, and it takes place in Kansas. Kansas Governor Sam Brownback signed into law this week legislation that allows student groups, student groups at public colleges and universities to engage in discrimination without penalty. That is correct. Kansas Governor Sam Brownback signed into law legislation that allows student groups at public colleges and universities to engage in discrimination without penalty as long as the discrimination is rooted in, and here's the phrase that keeps coming up over and over and over again, we don't know what it means, but anybody can claim it, if this discrimination is rooted in, quote, sincerely held religious beliefs. That is the vague bellwether that all of these different legislations are citing. Nobody knows what it means, but it's super easy to claim. Governor Brownback there in Kansas has a long history of outspoken opposition to LGBT equality. He did not sign this bill quietly. He signed the measure during a ceremony. He had a whole ceremony. It was celebratory. He was surrounded by lawmakers and lobbyists for the Kansas Catholic Conference and the Family Policy Alliance of Kansas. This is what this legislation does. Let me explain this to you, and then I'll tell you why I am so crazy fired up about this one. The legislation is officially titled the Campus Religious Freedom Bill. Because apparently if we put freedom in there, nobody can argue against it, even though this has absolutely nothing to do with freedom. So the bill prohibits schools from denying funds or space on campus to faith-based groups that make adherence to certain beliefs a condition of membership or leadership. This means, for example, this is what this means. A Christian group would be allowed to reject a student who is Muslim, Jewish, or gay. A group could also reject someone who does not subscribe to the group's theological convictions about, you know, say, for example, sex outside of marriage. Such rejections, as long as they are justified by, again, that crazy bellwether of nothingness, sincerely held religious beliefs, those rejections, if they are held on those grounds, could not be used as grounds for the university officials to disband the group or deny on-campus meeting space, even if, this is the key piece here, and one of the many reasons I'm so fired up, even if these rejections violate the school's own non-discrimination policy. So, let me break this down for you. First, let me give you some background. New listeners, if you don't know, this isn't my full-time job. I very much enjoy doing this show with So Gay. I get to talk to people like Carney Wilson. It's very exciting for me. I get to talk to just tons of great folks. You're going to hear Frankie Bashan coming up. Dr. Frankie's going to give us some relationship advice. I love doing this show. 348 episodes, 7.5 years, love doing it. But I do have a day job. I know, it's crazy. But I do have a day job. I am a college professor during the day. And prior to being a college professor, because my area of expertise is educational administration, specifically what goes on college campuses, prior to being a college professor, I was a dean of students for 10 years. I am all about a student's co-curricular life. Every piece of research out there shows that when a college student gets involved in co-curricular life, they are happier. Their grades are better, and they are astronomically more likely to be retained. They actually finish college when they get involved. So I am all about co-curricular life, and I'm all about eliminating any and all barriers to students getting involved in co-curricular life. We don't want any barriers whatsoever. We want students to be able to join any club that interests them in any way. They will be happier. It will be better for the club to have more participation. That student will get better grades. It happens. And they will be so much more likely to finish college. Okay? The other piece of my life has been supporting colleges and universities to craft non-discrimination statements that are really much more inclusive than whatever they had before. And the big piece of that has been adding sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression to their non-discrimination statements. Now, every college and university does not sport a non-discrimination statement that features those protections, but so many do. And it is a process because you have to explain to people, yes, we already did protect for gender. What does it mean to now protect for gender identity and gender expression? There's a whole learning curve that needs to happen. So colleges and universities put in this work. They amend their non-discrimination statement. They now protect for sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression. And now the great state of Kansas is basically stepping in and saying, we don't care. We are superseding you, even though your non-discrimination statement tells your students, look, you can participate fully. You can be a part of any club, no matter your sexual orientation, no matter your gender identity, no matter your gender expression. Now the state of Kansas is saying, no, we are superseding that. We are passing a bill, Senate Bill 175, that tells your college campus, as long as a student group has a sincerely held religious belief, they may deny membership to any student as long as it fits that criteria. That's not okay. In my time, if there was ever a group, and I've worked with some groups that had some discriminatory practices, some student groups, I swoop in and disband them. Or I swoop in and initiate a process where they can't meet on campus anymore. Because the non-discrimination statement of the college and university says, you can't do this here. That's not what we are about. And yet, in Kansas, this is now what they are about. I am fired up about it. You got to pick a news story every week and get fired up about it. You can't just listen to our show and just take in all the news stories and say, oh man, that's not good what's happening in North Carolina. Oh man, they should be doing better in Georgia. Oh man, Kansas, what? You can't do that to a college and university. Now, I am not saying that you should get furious at every story because then you will burn out, but pick a story, get fired up about it, do your research and post that one. Get other people in the know. So take some action. That's what I will be doing. I'm going to be writing about Kansas. Terrible. Terrible stuff there. We got to get some good news. We got to get some good news out there. Hey, we like President Barack Obama. He's done some cool things. He is in Cuba this week. And he said this in Cuba, quote, I have come here to bury the last remnant of the Cold War in the Americas. And this began a wide-ranging speech in Havana's Alicia Alonso Grand Theater that included, among many issues, a mention of gay rights. Not only was President Obama in Cuba, but he mentioned gay rights. The president pointed to Cuba's, quote, enormous gains as one of their advantages of democratic society. He said this, quote, there are still enormous problems in our society, but democracy is the way that we solve them. That's how we got health care for more of our people. That's how we made enormous gains in women's rights, in gay rights. We, like every country, need the space that democracy gives us to change. We love it. This is President Obama. It was already historic that he's in Cuba, and then he threw in gay rights. I love it. I love it. Other great news in Los Angeles. When it comes to honoring LGBT history, Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti has no rivalry with New York City. He's added his voice to the chorus seeking to designate the Stonewall Inn as a national monument. In a letter sent to President Obama last week and posted online by the Human Rights Campaign, Mayor Garcetti called for making the Stonewall and the adjacent Christopher Park a national monument under the Antiquities Act. This would protect and preserve both of those landmarks under the management of the National Park Service. Mayor Garcetti said this, quote, the Stonewall riots in 1969 served as a historic turning point in LGBT history. Recognizing the Stonewall Inn and Christopher Park in New York City's West Village would honor the American LGBT experience in every city and help to teach people of an important historical event that has helped to shape our nation. That is fantastic. He continued, he wrote this, it is with this history in mind that I write in support of designating the Stonewall Inn in New York City as a national monument through the Antiquities Act. We love when mayors from different cities work together. That's a great thing. That's absolutely a great thing. If you have not read the interview that is up right now with RuPaul, it's over on vulture.com. You can search for the title of the interview is Real Talk with RuPaul. It is crazy long and it is crazy amazing. Amazing, amazing stuff. This is a long interview with RuPaul opining on so many different things about youth, about drag culture. It's an incredible one. I'll read you a little bit. The interviewer asked RuPaul, "How do you feel drag's function has changed?" And RuPaul said this quote, "The function hasn't changed. It's been the same since the beginning of time when shamans, witch doctors, or court jesters were the drags, which is to remind culture to not take itself seriously, to remind you that you are not your shirt or your religious affiliation. You are an extension of the power that created the whole universe. You are God in drag. You are dressed up in this outfit of a body, which is temporary. You are eternal. You are forever. You are unchanged. And this is a dream you're having. So don't get too attached to it. Make love. Love people. Be sweet. Have corn dogs. Dance. Live. Love. It's all good. You can't mess things up because you're eternal." It is an incredible interview. Again, it's over on vulture.com. The name of the piece is Real Talk with RuPaul. The interviewer is E. Alex Jung, and you must go check it out. I had to take a nap after I read the whole thing because I was so exhausted because it's so in-depth and there is so much going on, but I promise you, it is worth it. And finally, a new story out of Britain that's based on some research that we have to talk about. We have to talk about things like this. A major study has found that gay, lesbian, and bisexual people in Britain are much more likely to suffer from mental health problems than the rest of the population. The research is a meta-analysis published in the journal BMC Psychiatry. It looks at large-scale population surveys in England, Scotland, and Wales. Of the 94,000 responses, 1.1% identified as lesbian and gay, 0.9% identified as bisexual, and 0.8% as other. A total of 16.8% of heterosexual people surveyed said that they had symptoms of some sort of common mental disorder, such as depression or anxiety, but 26.2% of lesbian and gay people, 34% of bisexual people, and 23.8% of those who described themselves as other reported similar symptoms. Now, scientists already knew that LGB people were at more risk of mental health problems, but it's rarely been shown so clearly in Britain before. Dr. Joanna Semlion of London's Metropolitan University told BuzzFeed News this quote, "It's something we're aware of, but the data has usually come from U.S. studies." So here's the deal. This is not to say that the LGBTQ population is born with mental health issues. That's not what this is about. This is about the fact that we are still living in a culture that presents so many roadblocks, both personal and professional, and as we've seen this episode, governmental, that tell LGBTQ people, hey, there's something wrong with you. We're going to pass a legislation that allows people to discriminate against you. We're going to pass legislation that bars you from using the bathroom that you want to use, that codes with your gender. It should thus not be surprising to anyone that depression and anxiety skyrocket in the LGBTQ community. And by the way, not only is it skyrocketing in the LGBTQ community at large, but it is disproportionately worse in the younger community. Lesbian, gay, and bisexual people under 35 were nearly twice as likely as straight people to report having poor mental health. And lesbian, gay, and bisexual people over 55 were more than twice as likely. Young people and older people. People in the middle, ages 35 to 54, were also at greater risk, but at much lower levels. So much work to be done. Again, the study wasn't able to say why it differs with age like that, but one of the researchers had some thoughts, and we agree with this. Dr. Semlion said this, quote, "In the younger cohort, it could be that people are navigating the process of coming out, coming to terms with a sense of being different. Among older people, it could be that they grew up in a time when things were less supportive for LGB people, when their sexuality was perhaps still illegal." Yeah, that's the case. We have our invisible elders who are being denied services all over the place. So there's so much work to do there. We're barely talking about elder issues at large in society, and add in sexual orientation and they become even more invisible. And yes, sure, there are more and more youth coming out, and there is so much more visibility in mass media at large, within pop culture, so much more visibility of LGBTQ representation. But it doesn't make a difference if you are a young person growing up in a family that is in some way intolerant, where you are getting the messages in school or through your family, through many types of media, that being gay is not okay. This should surprise no one that these rates are skyrocketing of mental health issues in our LGBTQ brothers and sisters who are younger and who are older. So much work to be done. And the way that we approach this work is to use our voices. We use our voices. That's what we do. That is this week's news segment. We're going to take a quick musical break, and then we're going to be back with Dr. Frankie. She's going to give us some advice. All right, folks, and we are back. Well, as I said, we are joined by one of my favorite people ever. Dr. Frankie is the creator of Little Gay Book, a matchmaking service for lesbian and bisexual women. Her area of expertise is finding love for single lesbians, as well as dating and couples counseling. Dr. Frankie is an insider in the lesbian community and understands the challenges in meeting high-quality, professional, emotionally available women. They are out there and they are interested in a committed relationship. Again, one of my favorite people. She is back to give us some advice. Dr. Frankie, welcome back to The Show Is So Gay. We are just going to dive right in, as you and I always do. We had so many listeners submit questions, and they're such fun questions, and some very serious questions as well. But first, can we talk about you for a second? Tell our listening audience how this work feeds you. What do you get out of doing this?
I can't even imagine doing anything else. It is the most fulfilling profession, really. I get to help people on a daily basis in so many different capacities. I get to help them find love. I get to help them help themselves. I get to help them live healthier lives, through coaching and through psychotherapy and through matchmaking, and then through, you know, answering questions and educating people through radio shows like yours. And blogging and, you know, doing workshops and all of that stuff. It gives me so much joy and pleasure to see people living healthier lives. My calling is kind of to be somebody who can encourage people, support people, help people live deeper, more beautiful lives.
Nice.
So I love it.
When a match doesn't work out, is there a part of you that takes that personally, or you just work right through it?
Well, you know, there's always a little bit of disappointment.
Yeah.
I don't take it personally. I just, you know, it's just disappointing to see that something that seemed so hopeful and exciting end, you know. But
yeah.
I'm very sort of, I encourage people to kind of learn from their experiences and think about how they can better themselves and show up in their entirety for their next relationship, being more informed from their previous relationships. So it's all a journey and an opportunity to learn about ourselves and to learn how to, you know, give of ourselves in a greater capacity. So there's a little disappointment there.
I want to remind our listeners that you do, as one of your clients, you have to listen to Dr. Frankie a little bit. She's got some advice for you. There are ways to get kicked out of Dr. Frankie's service, right?
Sort of, yeah. I love my clients and I really enjoy helping them be successful in the dating world. But, you know, people sometimes have unrealistic expectations and even I can't always meet their needs.
Right.
So sometimes, very rarely could it, you know, is it not a great match and they're not taking my service seriously, because it's a service for monogamy. It's not a casual service, I should say.
Right. Right.
You know? Yeah.
How have the dating apps affected what it is that you do?
They really haven't. It's so different what I do. What I do is so personalized and customized and private that it's in a world of its own, you know? So it really is separate. It doesn't impact what I do at all.
Nice. Nice. And I went back and listened to some past appearances. We've actually never talked about this. Where did you come up with the name Little Gay Book?
I got some help.
Okay.
So I was struggling with a name, and I actually had one of my designers help brainstorm with me. And I wanted it to really, at the time, I was working with men too, so I wanted it to be really inclusive, and that's what we came up with together. So it was a collective experience. I also sort of surveyed my friends.
Okay.
And asked them to submit their ideas, and it was what we came, you know, it came out of a lot of different minds working together.
Nice, nice. Are you ready to get to the questions?
I am. I'm super excited. I love your questions.
These are fun. These are fun ones. Now, we're going to start serious. We're going to start with a serious one. This was submitted by Constantly Thinking in Cleveland, and they wrote in, "Dear Dr. Frankie, how do you get over someone who deeply hurt you?"
Yes, it's a good question.
Yeah.
I mean, most of us have had the experience of being deeply hurt, for sure. And I think one way that I find is most helpful is really just diving into oneself, taking really good care of yourself. And it's hard when you feel depressed and down and defeated.
Right.
But what needs to happen is that you need to kind of figure out how to pick yourself up, get to the gym, right? Get to see, you know, make an appointment with a therapist or a coach to help you, you know, just help you think through things, help you learn from the experience, give you some perspective, speak to somebody that's really neutral and not biased, right? Because we love to speak to our friends, but a coach or a therapist is very different from talking about our experiences with a friend. So exercise, eating well, you know, seeking some guidance and support, maybe engaging in some spirituality.
Nice.
You know, whether it be mindfulness, meditation, you know, whatever your religion may be, delving into that a bit. Finding meaning, purpose in your life is really helpful. So really focusing on yourself would be a way to recover from something that's really so deeply painful.
Yeah.
It's a loss, right? When somebody hurts us deeply or we lose something that we love, you go through a grieving process.
And I think that one of the pieces that's so acute in the LGBT community is that because we are a smaller community and in many ways we are more tight-knit, the reminders of that loss in our small friend circles can be ever-present. So that whole idea of divvying up friends is, hey, look, I know that one, you know, and having this be a constant reminder. How do you navigate through that? That's just such a difficult piece.
It's really hard, and I think that people tend to feel like they need to take sides.
Yeah.
And I think people also sometimes forget that there's two sides to every story, and it's hard for them to stay neutral. So, you know, I think that there are always people that we can access, I think, or for the most, not always, I shouldn't say always, because some people have a harder time, right, and just relating to people and having interpersonal relationships. But there, if we really dig deep, I think that there are people out there that can be supports to us. And whether it be, you know, attending a support group, if you don't have a good support network yourself, looking up a support group in your area that might fit some of your needs, even like a 12-step program is another way, right, to take care of yourself. There's like every kind of 12-step program available. So, I, you know, just figuring out how to get support, it's ideal to be able to get support from the community that we already have. But I know when there's a breakup, it's like there's, you know, people start to pick sides. And that's very, very common. So just normalizing that and recognizing that it's not about you. It's just human nature where people feel like they need to choose.
Yeah.
They need to pick. So finding one person even that you can kind of lean on and ask for their help and ask for their support, because people want to help, but they don't necessarily know how much we're struggling.
Right.
Because I think that it's hard for just us as humans to ask for help. And sometimes we appear like we're doing better than we actually are. So it's important to realize that you need to ask for help, and people often who care about us really want to be helpful.
Nice. Nice. Well, actually, I'm going to pair that up with another question that's further down the list, but it's an offshoot of this one. One of our listeners wrote in, "Dear Dr. Frankie, what are questions I can ask or signs I can look for that someone is not over their last relationship?"
That's a great one, because I think that definitely comes up more often than we would like to believe. You know, I think when somebody just keeps ruminating about their past partner and keeps talking about situations and things trigger memories frequently, and you feel like you're spending more time processing your new partner's previous relationship, that is a sign, right, of issues that have really not been resolved.
Yeah. That's such a tough one for me personally, just because I think it freaks people out if I mention my ex-husband in a sentence. Now, obviously, it's not something that I talk about on a first date, but it's also not something that I'm in any position to nor want to deny that I had. That huge chunk of my life, a third of my life, was spent with somebody else. And I never can maybe figure out how much is too much to talk about it, but then not mentioning it at all just feels really disingenuous.
I agree with you, Ken. I think it's important to be able to talk about somebody that has been very, a significant part of our lives, somebody that's so important to us. There absolutely has to be room for that. And it doesn't mean if you talk about your ex that you're not over him or her. I think when it becomes an issue is when it just feels like there's a lot of processing going on rather than, you know, sharing about past experiences in a way that seems like it's been resolved. I think that, you know, if there's a lot of emotion and a lot of being triggered by situations in our current relationship that are just bringing up stuff that could be potentially unresolved from our past relationships.
Yeah. And what I hear you saying is that it's totally healthy for me to have a huge dry erase board in my living room that has the current person and my ex-husband with pros and cons, right? Like, that's fine.
Wait.
Is that okay? Is that not right?
Not so much.
Okay. All right. Well, that's something to work on. It's dry erase. I could just erase it. Except I wrote it in Sharpie. But that's okay. That's all right.
Oh, geez.
I know. We got work to do. We got work to do. All right.
Yes.
More questions. Amber wrote in, she asked, can a long-distance relationship really work?
Yes and no. So my feeling about it is that it can temporarily. They get to a point where they're not, if something doesn't happen, if there's not a shift towards coming closer after a certain period of time, you know, people start to get really tired of putting in the work, and it starts to feel like it's not really real, because it's like every time you get together, it's kind of like a fantasy, you know what I mean? It's like, you're not living reality together.
Right.
It feels like a vacation every time you're together. So fears start to crop up, like, what's it going to be like if we really were to live together, live in the same city together even? And people start to get nervous about whether that's even possible, and then it feels like there's just so much effort being made to sustain the relationship if, you know, two people don't, you know, if the couple doesn't figure out how to move closer together. And I would say I've seen it work for about 2 years maximum in a healthy way.
And and we should highlight that is an acute issue for the LGBT community, particularly when we're talking about inter-country dating and citizenship laws don't necessarily support this couple being together. So that's a rough one. That's a rough one.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, this question came in, and coincidentally, it's something you just posted about, so I think you're ready for this one. Dear Dr. Frankie, age differences, how much is too much?
So the research shows, I think it's 12 years.
Okay.
So 12 years or more, it becomes more challenging because our sort of pop culture references or social references are just not the same. So it's hard to relate, you know. So the music is different, television shows are different, and it just, the gap feels greater.
Yeah.
So 12 or more.
Okay. All right. Now, what about the piece, again, making this one even specific to the LGBT community? I know that a lot of our brothers and sisters feel an added pressure to not be perceived as dating too far from their age just because they feel like they need to present as healthy of a relationship as possible. And so I think that some of our listeners would balk at the idea even of 12 years. Like, oh, I couldn't possibly present that in the same way, you know, my straight coworker could, because I feel the added pressure to present a healthy relationship.
I mean, who's to say that being with somebody with a bigger age gap is unhealthy?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen many relationships that are really healthy that in the straight and gay community that are more than 12 years.
Yeah. What about that general idea that our LGBT brothers and sisters feel like they have to, you know, present something that's more socially acceptable because there's already a stigma around their relationship?
I think that that is decreasing. I don't know what you think, but I think now that we are becoming more accepted and gay marriage is, how many states now offer,
I feel like it's everybody but Ohio at this point, it feels like. So it's not cool, Dr. Frankie, to be living in a state now. I went from Vermont to Ohio.
Oh,
there's
God.
Only 13 states left, and I'm in one of them.
Oh, no.
That's grounds to move, isn't it?
Well, hopefully there are other things about Ohio that you're liking. I feel like there's less pressure because now we don't have to appear perfect.
Right.
Before, we were under such scrutiny, we had to appear perfect. And now we can, feel like, oh, well, you know what? We're not very different than straight people, right? And how they have their relationships. It's, we deal with the same struggles. So, and many of the same struggles. So I feel like the pressure is decreased now. The more we're accepted, the more we can be open about our struggles and the difficulties that we experience.
I agree. All right. Okay. here's a fun one. This is a fun one. Dear Dr. Frankie, how do you establish whether or not you're actually in a relationship with someone?
You talk about it.
What? That's advocated communication. What are other ways we can do it?
How do you establish that you're in a relationship without communicating about it?
Your answer is too easy. That would be communication. We're not for that, are we?
Well, okay. If we take communication.
No. Communication is good, right? Some would argue
yes,
that's
it's so
good.
Important.
Okay.
Just ask a simple question like, where are we? Like, what are we doing here? Here's how I feel about what's happening. Here's what I would love to happen. Have happened. How do you feel?
Yeah, I feel like people should know that, but the fact that the question came in implies that there's... So what does it mean, okay, that someone posed this question? Doesn't that mean something?
Yes. I'm thinking that, at the core, we are all very fearful of rejection.
Yeah.
So maybe just wondering whether we're in a relationship or not, or what our relationship means, is something that feels safer in some way than actually verbalizing our curiosity about what's happening and expressing what we would like to have happen.
Yeah. So to be clear, Dr. Frankie is pro-communication, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you know what I really love? They don't just assume that I'm their girlfriend.
They ask you.
Yes.
I love it. Now, what if she defines that word differently than you do?
Then here we communicate. Here you go. You communicate. Well, what does girlfriend mean to you?
Yeah. That's scary. It's scary. I'm nervous about being someone's girlfriend, but that's a whole different set of issues. Yeah. That's a different thing. Okay. Here's another question. It's only four words. Four words. Hate his parents. Help.
Hate his parents. Help.
Yeah.
That's a difficult one.
Yeah.
Because he didn't pick his parents.
Right.
And you're stuck with his parents. So what I say is work towards acceptance and interact with them in moderation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would also say I think one of the things I often see in my friend circles is that this kind of dichotomy where one partner says to the other one, like, oh, my gosh, I can't stand my parents, but then gets upset when his partner dislikes his parents. And I just kind of feel like, well, you can't necessarily have it both ways. If you keep denigrating your parents and saying they're horrible to hang out with, I would assume at some point your partner's going to agree with you.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, they get influenced by that, right?
They
care about you. And if you're expressing repeatedly your unhappiness with your parents, it's going to inevitably influence how your partner thinks and feels about them.
Yeah. There you go. All right, next question. I think they're looking for some validation from you. I don't want to interpret too much. Our PhDs are in very different areas. So they wrote, Dear Dr. Frankie, she's technically married. That's okay, right?
Wow. Okay. here we go again with the idea of communication.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is there an agreement? Is there an agreement to having an open marriage? If she's technically married, does her partner know that you are intimate with her?
Right.
If she's married and her partner thinks that this is a monogamous relationship, then no, it's not okay.
Not okay. That's not a good recipe.
No.
Okay. All right. Now, I had three different people write in about ghosting. I am obsessed with ghosting. Do you know about ghosting?
Oh my gosh, I don't. And I'm so excited right now that I'm going to learn something new.
I'm going to forward you the article. Everybody, if you just Google ghosting, this Huffington Post piece is going to come up. It's called Ghosting, the 21st Century Dating Problem Everyone Talks About, But No One Knows How to Deal With. Okay? I'm going to actually read the – I know. It's so exciting, except if you are someone who's been ghosted, as I have been, Dr. Frankie, 3 times over the past year. I know. I will read the first paragraph because it's essentially me. After 3 months of dating, 23-year-old Michael was optimistic about his relationship with Linda. They were together often, and he'd even met her parents. One night at dinner, the where-is-this-going conversation came up. Michael and Linda mutually agreed that they wanted to move forward in the relationship. He dropped her off at home, kissed her goodnight, and never heard from her again. After his attempts to reach her went unanswered, Michael put on his cute guy hat and delivered Linda's favorite cupcakes to her office, only to find out his name had been removed from the guest list at the gate. He's been ghosted. They define it as the term ghosting, sometimes known as the slow fade, refers to the anecdotally pervasive act where one dater ends a relationship by simply disappearing. But they still have like this presence on social media, so you can kind of see that they're out there, but you've been ghosted 3 times in the past, say, year and a half. I have been ghosted where everything was fine, everything was moving forward, and then they just disappear. It's like a thing.
Ooh, creepy.
Right?
Yes, that's creepy.
What do we do about this? I mean, I'm telling you, it is the craziest thing where everything is just fine. And you can kind of see them on social media, which people should go back and listen to Dr. Frankie and Ken talking previously. You should not be friending them after a first date.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
No. Yeah.
But what – I guess there's a couple questions here. I mean, one, let's talk about Michael. How do you work through – do you just let go of Linda? Do you just – how do you work through that? And then we'll talk about Linda in a second because I feel like she's got some issues as well.
I mean, maybe that is when it becomes more intimate and people have a really hard time with intimacy. And it's more – it's just easier to kind of – to disappear, to evaporate, to become a ghost.
Yeah.
Right, but you can't really become a ghost now because we have social media, so you can see what we're doing. But years ago, right, you could disappear and then you'd really disappear. But now I think it's more painful because you can see what they're doing out there.
Yeah.
But I imagine when the relationship starts to progress, like meeting the in-law, like meeting the parents, you know. And this is, you know, an individual who struggles with intimacy and closeness, then they, you know, get into this category. I can't believe I haven't heard of it, of ghosting.
Yeah. Oh, you're gonna read this article and you're gonna be like, oh, I gotta go fly out and hug Ken. It's happened 3 times. It's crazy. It's crazy. They just disappear. And I didn't. I'm sure you hear this phrase all the time. And so know that I have some self-awareness as I speak. Do you not hear the phrase all the time? I didn't do anything wrong.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, I think people have a hard time rejecting people. It's hard to be rejected, but it's also hard to reject. So when you're dating, you're evaluating each other. You're sort of seeing if this works for you. And sometimes you decide that it doesn't, and it's too hard to be honest with the person about why it really doesn't work for you.
Right.
And they just disappear. Or out of nowhere, they just say that they're not happy. It's not working for them, and they don't give you anything tangible to really wrap your mind around.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm actually, with comparison to that last statement and ghosting, I'll take that one where they're like, I'm out. I'm not interested. That would be something. The lack of communication is nutty. And by the way, this is not like a let's help Ken thing. I hear this constantly from folks.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is also a result of us being so kind of detached emotionally because of all the ways in which we communicate, and we communicate so much now, but it's empty communication. You know, nobody handwrites anything anymore. We rarely pick up the phone to speak. We're texting, we're emailing, we're tweeting, you know. So I just think it's like the intimacy, like the closeness, the, you know, having it feel real isn't there anymore.
Right.
There's so much distance between the communication, between the two people, because of the way that we interface today. I think it's just, it's made it okay in some way to just to treat each other this way, which is so wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Can we say that Little Gay Book has a no ghosting policy?
Yes. I am completely opposed to treating anyone like that.
So what advice would you give to the Lindas of the world who obviously are out, you know, they're out of the relationship. They're just not interested anymore. But something is preventing them from having that conversation. What would you say to the Lindas of the world, or the three guys that I'll give you their numbers afterwards to call who did this? What would you tell them in order to work through that and actually say something?
Pick up the phone and just pick up the phone. And if you can't see the person face to face, which I know is really, can be really difficult.
Right.
Pick up the phone and at least have a conversation. And give that person that you spent time with and that you were intimate with the space to express their disappointment after you let them know that it's not working for you. And, you know, if it's something that you feel too uncomfortable sharing specifically with that person, because sometimes that happens, right? You don't really want to hurt somebody too terribly.
Right.
So you don't want to tell them the truth. So then just say, this isn't working for me. It doesn't feel like the right fit for me. And I just, all I can say just isn't working for me, and I, you know, and I'm sorry. I'm, that kind of, just be compassionate.
Yeah.
We're all human, right? We all want to be understood. We want to be loved. We want to be handled with care, and give them the opportunity to express their sadness.
Yeah.
Like, don't cut them off in that conversation. Don't prematurely end the conversation. Give them space to express their disappointment and sadness, even if it's extremely uncomfortable to sit with it.
Yeah.
Because you owe that to them.
Indeed. Indeed. This is why she has a PsyD and my PhD is in useless stuff. There we go. There we go. Now, I have to say, as an individual, which you are, you know, I would imagine any number of times people want to know about your personal life, and you've been very open about your personal life, because I would assume people are like, well, what kind of relationship are you in? Because I want you to model success for me. And one of the things that I love about you is that you are open, that you, as it turns out, are a human who has struggles as well.
Absolutely, I do. And I am open about my life. I really, I feel like my experiences inform my work, and
yeah,
I'm able to help people through my own experience, not just, you know, my experience of working with my clients and my education, but just my own personal struggle. I've been separated for a year, and I was with my partner for 12 years. So this year has been a really interesting, challenging year for me, just trying to figure out how to co-parent. You know, she's moved on. She's dating somebody. Figuring out, you know, and actually right now she's in the process of, you know, introducing this person to my kids.
Mm.
So there's, you know, I am now experiencing for the first time this sort of situation, and it's giving me such great perspective, and I feel like I can help my clients, you know, better.
Yeah.
Navigate it in the future for sure. But yeah, so I'm so yeah, it's been, I'm a year out, and there are ups and downs, and I can say it's not easy. It's not easy when you have a love that you have for many, many years, and you have children with that person, and you have to end it because it's not working. But there's still such a, for me, there's such a, I just cared so deeply for her. So
yeah,
it's an adjustment for sure.
A year ago, you had a Facebook post about this. You know, you put this out there. Did you pause at all before you did that? Like, what went into you sharing with really the world, hey, this is what's going on with me. This is part of my work.
Yes, I did, because there was a part of me that felt like I was going to disappoint my fans and my followers and my clients and so on. I think that people really looked up to me, and they thought I was a role model. So I feared that I would disappoint them, because
yeah,
they would see that actually I too am imperfect and struggle in some of the same ways that they do. And I just felt like I needed to be very authentic, honest, and open with my clients, because that is what I encourage them to do on a daily basis. And I had to do it. I couldn't keep it from them, but I can't say that it didn't give me pause.
Yeah. And I already know the answer to this one, but I want our listeners to hear it from you. Tell everyone what happens when you're open and authentic, because look at the response that you got.
It was amazing. So much love came pouring in. I was shocked. I got the most beautiful emails, phone calls. I mean, I even got flowers. I was so touched. I felt so held, and I'm so happy I did it because I felt there were times when I felt really alone.
Yeah.
And I was scared that I would just, like I said, that I would really disappoint the community, and it was the opposite. I haven't heard one person say that they're disappointed in the fact that I am now separated, and not one person.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Now, I do know, hopefully I'm not letting the cat out of the bag here, that you are headed to the Dyna this year.
I am.
Is it your first time going?
Yes, it's my first time going.
Well, then you can't offer tips for other people, but I was going to say, I mean, I would imagine that if I were a lesbian, and when I wake up in the morning, I often do imagine that it would be very overwhelming there at the Dyna.
You know what, that's my fear, and I think that's what has kept me away for so many years, but I feel like I can't be a lesbian and never have experienced the Dyna.
Right.
You know, so I just need to go and do it. And I think that I think it's going to be a lot of fun to just be around that much energy and excitement. And I don't think that I have been around that environment since probably spring break in high school.
Nice. Well, that was only 2 years ago, though.
Right. So. I wish. Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well, last question for you, because this is one of my favorite things for you to dish on. Give us a do, give us a don't. I love when we even talk about speed dating, because you have the best stories about someone who did it really well, but then it's also entertaining someone who really didn't do it very well.
So you know what I keep hearing, and it's endless. I keep hearing it again and again about, you know, people putting up the wrong, like just lying on their profiles online with using photos that are inaccurate, that are 10 years old, writing narratives that aren't accurate either. Just be real. Just be honest. Be who you are. Show up, you know, with truth and honesty, because what happens is you set yourself up for rejection if you show up in any other way. So that's the first, definitely something that sort of I feel frustrated with, because it's such a no-brainer in my mind, but people keep doing it. I don't really understand that.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, and taking things slow. It's really exciting when there's chemistry and you meet somebody finally that you're thinking could be the real deal, and you could see yourself with this person for a long time. Take it slow, because when we jump into it and we dive in head first, oftentimes that puts out the fire.
Yeah.
So, and I've certainly been there, so I know how hard it is to resist the urge, but if you can really try your hardest to do that, it'll stretch out that period of excitement, which you really want to do, right? Because you don't get it back.
Right.
So I you know, that's another little bit of advice.
Is there a part of you that's maybe even a little bit incredulous that you have to tell people over and over, I need you to communicate and I need you to be honest?
You know, I get it, you know? I think that it's hard for us to be vulnerable, and,
yeah.
And being honest means that we're being vulnerable, and, you know, we're afraid of getting hurt, and now we're just talking about how we're hurting each other
right.
More now than ever, because communication is just not what it needs to be. So I think that people are being less authentic, and less care is happening.
Yeah.
And I think that people are becoming more guarded, and it's harder for them to be honest and real at this point.
Absolutely.
If we can each work on that, I think it can just help ground us and help hold on to all, you know, hold on to that potential, the realness, the authenticity, the real intimacy that we're all searching for. We want it so badly. We have to fight against what's happening with, you know, all this technology that's pulling us away from it, really.
Nice. All right, folks, the website is littlegaybook.com. They have services in the San Francisco Bay Area and Los Angeles, in New York, in Hawaii, and a new Cleveland office coming up soon, I assume. That's what we're working on. They also have a no-ghosting policy right there,
yes.
littlegaybook.com. Dr. Frankie, I mean, you can't possibly need me to tell you how much I adore you, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Thank you so, so much. This is so fun. I love all the questions that your listeners submit, and I love being a guest on your show. So I look forward to being invited on again, and hopefully it won't be in a year and a half.
Indeed, indeed. All right, well, you have fun at the Dyna.
All right, thank you. Next year you're going to have to join me.
You have fun at the Dyna.
Come on, you're going to miss out.
Guess I wasn't the best one. Me, my
You guys, get out there. Go do whatever it is that you do to use your voice to make a difference for your LGBTQ and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?